There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 878, March 29th. 2021, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say Palace Revolt, put down by the Panzer Division. Commander Hamilton, 8 miles high. Back to you, Chief.
Thank you. On today's program, LCH is special. So special. Vettel doesn't feel at home. Russian sandwich wrapper hurts Alonso. Gary gives us another info-packed segment of InThePitLane.com. We've got Tech Talk with Tim, and he's got the Grosjean accident report. And just a reminder, we need your contributions to keep this program on the servers. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you want to. Nask, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Mr. Rogers, thank you. You know, United Airlines has friendly skies. And high above that altitude is F1 skies. And that's where I am after the thrilling, fascinating, great race we had on Sunday, which is what I call the essence of motor racing in full display. What a way to start the season. How excited are you, Mr. Rogers?
I'm pretty excited. I was hoping for a little more excitement. I was hoping for a little more competition. I didn't think we would be cheering LCH on so quickly, but there it is. He's leading the championship. What a surprise, surprise, surprise.
You know, it's the first time in several years that he has won the season opener, which has pretty much been the domain of, to whom it may concern. But you know what is interesting, Mr. Rogers? I mean, whether it was Max winning or Lewis, this was going to be a great race. And the whole tempo for the race was set in qualifying. But it was here at this track, in the Arabian Night, not too long ago, that Nico Rosberg was second to Lewis and said after the race, I should have won that race. Okay? Now, Sunday, Dr. Lewis gave a dose of same medicine to Max. Everybody thought, including the Mercedes team, and I had no doubt that Max was going to win the race after the quali because he was like 4/10 faster than Lewis, and who has done that in the last 6-7 years? So the desert wind and wind were blowing Red Bull's way. And as my friend Mr. Captain Neil used to say, and we're not talking Captain and Tennille here, he used to say that winning in the best car is great, but winning in the car that has no business winning is magic. And folks, we saw magic delivered in the last 10 laps of the Bahrain Grand Prix. And I hope very much we see a lot of such races, and may the best man win. And the best man is not going to be the same driver every race. But if anybody had any doubts about how good Lewis is, and he only wins in the best car, Sir Lewis definitely delivered a royal performance. And you know, I, as a lifelong race fan, I would have been probably even more elated if Max had won the race, because, you know, we are all waiting for regime change. And the host himself has been waiting for competition. I think it has arrived and is here to stay. And the only thing more exciting than competition is our favorite, cage rattling, and that is coming soon. And you know what was interesting? We had the issue with Sergio Perez before the race even started. So basically, in short, the race weekend had everything: a Dutch treat, Incoli, Mexican standoff, Russian roulette, and Hammer Times can touch this to start the season. So, folks, welcome to 2021 Formula One. This is going to be fantastic. Sir, I know you've been a big fan of Lewis Hamilton for a while, as you are of NASCAR. Wouldn't you call this win a great win and a special?
Well, I mean, I knew Mercedes had the best car since I called them out for sandbagging, faking it. I think they were acting at the highest level. Possibly an Oscar nomination is going to come. But no, I mean, Mercedes is still Mercedes. It's last year's car, folks. Last year's car won the championship. This year's car is last year's car. Nothing has changed that much except for Fernando. He's pretty happy and he's impressed with himself, which I adore. But there was a lot of struggling on this field. That was the big clincher for me. All the struggling by all the drivers who switched teams. But I have to admit, for me, the big story is not Red Bull and Mercedes, is how well Ferrari qualified. Because everybody, and maybe they were sandbagging too, I'm not sure, but Ferrari looks pretty competitive, especially compared to Alpine, who is mid-pack at best. And, of course, Sebastian Vettel, he is being crushed by his own weight. Maybe he's got too many chips on his shoulder, I'm not sure. But for me, this is the beginning of the 2021 season, or for me, it's the continuation of the 2020 season, and that's why all the advertising for Expo 2020 in Abu Dhabi was so apropos.
Yes, sir, and you know, talking of Sebastian Vettel, I thought he had left Ferrari, but looks like he had just brought the same package to Aston Martin. And he ran into the back of Ocon, and like any other great driver, remember when he ran into Mark Webber in Turkey? I could not believe it. I mean, this maybe he made a mistake, but this was pure and simple Sebastian's mistake. But he wasted no time in getting on the team radio and complaining about Esteban Ocon. But that's the way it goes sometime. And yes, Ferrari, good to see them be quick. And Carlos Sainz Jr. was looking good at home at Ferrari. That was good. And we already know and have seen Charles Leclerc win races, so it will be good if they can come back and win some races this year. And in winning the race, Sir Lewis also surpassed the record of Michael Schumacher of leading the most laps in F1 history. 96 Grand Prix wins. I can't wait for the century. That will be the day he will be singing, "Bye Bye Miss McLaren Pie. Drove my Mercedes to history." So I'm I like history and I'm enjoying this very much. Shall we talk a little bit about Quali,
yes. I mean, it was great. I have to admit, the Mercedes looked fantastic. It was back to the old same old. Red Bull looked good. And they have some issues. I think they may have been pushing the car to their limits. But we'll see what happens. I do know one thing. Mercedes is stronger than everybody believes. I don't know why, but I believe Mercedes was toying with Max in this Grand Prix. And we're in for a big eighth title for Lewis because he's being forced to leave this team in a strange and bizarre way. And he's going to do it winning everything just to make the man pissed off.
Yes, the Max Factor put on some nice Red Bull lipstick by grabbing first pole of the season by 0.4, which was very, very impressive, especially considering Lewis Hamilton was second on the grid. And this was first pole at season opener for Red Bull since 2013. Sebastian Vettel was shell-shocked after being kaput in Q1. He said, "I'm still learning the car." The other surprise of Q1 was Esteban Ocon. I think he's just going to feel the pressure of his teammate as the season progresses. His teammate, of course, the wonderful Machismo man, made it to Q3 after being out of F1 for 2 years. And for that, he gets my Machismo of Manama award. Sergio Perez was out in Q2, which was disappointing. Earlier, he said it will take 5 races to get comfortable with his new car. And I note that with interest because not too long ago, his current teammate took his first Grand Prix win as a teenager on his Red Bull debut. So I guess some people do need 4 or 5 races or even more to find out where the brake pedal is, and that's just the way it is. But you know, Mr. Rogers, it was brought up on the Sky telecast also, and it's pretty obvious to even casual followers of Formula One. Looks like whoever drives the second Red Bull car gets lost in the rapture of love that Dr. Marco and Christian Horner have for their love child. But who can blame them? And you talk about Mercedes as the best car and Red Bull is looking strong. Where would these two teams, if both Max and Lewis were sitting on a beach chair at Sao Paulo with Alonso? So they do have these guys, one guy in each team, that can take it and stick it to the other man. Now, you know, there's been a lot of talk about low rake and high rake, and I'm no Colin Chapman of Karachi, so I'm not going to go into details here, but apparently Mercedes, you know, had a low rake car, and so did Aston Martin, and apparently they have lost performance compared to last year because of the rule changes. And according to the Aston Martin team principal, man from Detroit, Otmar Szafnauer, said it looked to him, comparing the results of qualifying from Bahrain only a few months ago to this year, that the high rake cars have gained as much as a second a lap on the low rake ones. So we'll see how this thing develops. And you know, engineers being engineers, within a few races, they will find a fix. And hopefully anybody who has lost advantage will gain it, and then we'll be back to more what you call competition. But see, this is how I look at the season. And of course, with the success Mercedes has been having for season after season, they are the favorite, and they will be the favorite. And I think what helped Lewis win the race, apart from his immense talent, was his experience. Because as I had a couple of people send me text messages, these are diehard racing fans, and they were disappointed that Max did not win. And both of them basically wrote that he could have let Lewis retake the lead at a place where it would have been easier for him to pounce back on him. But, you know, there's a lot of racing left, so I think we're going to have some great racing throughout the season. This is what I'm thinking. If Max wins 3 of the first 5 races, which is possible given his talent, and looks like the Honda power unit has some more Zen in it, then there is a good chance, but no guarantee, we may have a regime change by the time we get to Abu Dhabi, also known as Abu Dhabi. On the other hand, if Lewis wins 3 of the first 5 races, he's already got one, then he will be ahead of the 8 ball. But whatever it is, you know, if Lewis wins 8 championships, and nobody has done that in Formula One, so that will be great. If Max can derail his gravy train, then it will be equivalent to Alonso shooting down the Red Baron in 2005. So I'm really looking forward to these historical events in our lifetime. Now, Mr. Max had the pace, had the fresher tires, but still lost to Lewis. And I really still cannot believe how he can lose that race. And you know, there's a lot of talk about this turn 4 off-track excursion by him. What is your take on that?
Yeah, well, Lewis Hamilton, while he was charging, trying to do the undercut, he cut turn 4 many, many times. I can't keep track of how many times Lewis Hamilton cut turn 4. And he was not given a penalty at all it wasn't even brought up. But other drivers who cut turn four got the finger pointed at him, including Max. That's why I couldn't understand. Everybody is so loving and kissing each other, when in reality, Red Bull should have been completely pissed off. But this is a new world where we all love each other. There's no meanness anymore. And I just don't understand this track limits thing could be so lopsided. But as far as I'm concerned, let them race. I don't care about track limits.
Well, I totally agree with you. You know, let them sort out. And if somebody takes an advantage of one race, sooner or later, what goes around comes around. But, you know, this issue of going off track, which Lewis did again and again, and so did Bottas. But then, you know, more information came out after the race that it was first Red Bull told Max to do the same. And I don't know if it was done before or after this. They were the ones who complained to FIA or the stewards that Lewis was going off track. And that's when Lewis was called, and he even said, I've been doing all race long. But the thing is, you know, there is a problem with these rules. They are very clear to Effie Bailey and Michael Massey, but to racing drivers and fans, I mean, I remember some years ago, I mean, small touch, you get a 10-second penalty. And what was amazing is I would read these names of the steward. I mean, they were like people from different countries who were members of the ASN, you know, the organization that represents a country in FIA. These were not racing drivers or racing marshals, you know. So what we have right now is much better than what it was like 10 years ago in the days of Cucumber, if you remember that. So I'm also not very happy with these constant, you know, races should be won on racetracks, not in courtrooms or, you know, steward's room. And we have seen a lot of these calls in the last few years, which were not popular with drivers and fans. I'm sure you remember the penalty on Seb in Canada a few years ago, and the race that Lewis lost to Kimi at Spa, which was a complete bullshit penalty. In my opinion, Lewis let him go by, but he was smart enough to just stay very close to him. And even Ayrton Senna lost a championship at Suzuka, because he did not re-enter the track from where he had left, and he had not gone like totally off track. He was just at a kink or some sort of a dog leg. But I think this is just my personal take. Any pass where all four wheels leave the track, that should, and you leaving the track, and this is what Mike Massey later said about you talking about Lewis doing it again and again. His thing is, they were told that buzzword they are using, lasting advantage, that if you leave a track and pass somebody, that's what they call a lasting advantage. That's not allowed. But again, these things, you know, are open to interpretation and not very clear. They should have very clear-cut rule. Either you can just go, you can do whatever you want, then everybody will do that, which is the way it should be. Because the way these tracks are, they are, you know, they got a huge parking lot style runoff area. So if one guy can take an advantage, and it's really an advantage, others will follow. So everybody will be on the same page instead of what Lewis called changing rules during the race, which is confusing and not good for the sport. I mean, the most famous example of this is the famous pass by Zanardi on Brian Herta at Laguna Seca. You know, Zanardi left the track, even missed a corner, and then comes ahead and wins the race and becomes a big hero. I mean, that's not fair to win a race like that. But that's just my opinion. Oh, shall we move on to the most important item on the podcast, Fernando?
Absolutely. I just got a call from Pedro.
Yeah, he looked very impressive in the early goings, which should not surprise anyone. But then a sandwich wrapper got in the way of his Brembo. I think his physio should have listened to the race control before the race. They told him not to put his paella in a Ziploc. But the guy is incredible, man. He was out of racing for 2 years. He had no problem. I think he was running as high as 7th, right, if I'm not mistaken?
You are absolutely correct.
But you know what is sad, Mr. Rogers, and I'm sure you can totally agree on this, it's really sad for the race fans and also for him, that a driver of this immense talent, and I repeat, immense machismo talent, has not been in a competitive car. You know, he had some opportunities at Ferrari and Petrov got in the way, but we have not seen him since he walked away from his 2 or 3 year contract from McLaren first time around. We have not seen him in a car as dominant as Lewis has now or Sebastian had for 4 years. So, and that's a real tragedy for racing fans, because I cannot believe that a driver who derails or shoots down the Red Baron and then defends the championship against, and both of them had competitive packages in those days, that guy has not won a championship since then. So the last time he won a championship was what, 2006?
Yeah, but you have to remember the system. If they don't like you, the system could put you down and stomp you down. But if they love you, the system can lift you and adore you and praise you and send you to the big paella in the sky.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, I was thinking the other day, we all make mistakes. I think his big mistakes, which has cost him a third championship, I mean, for sure has cost him a third championship, is signing a contract with John Dennis behind the back of his manager. Because I just cannot see a shrewd operator that Flavio is, whether you like him or not is another story. If you have Flavio in your corner or a shrewd operator like Willy Weber, they will make sure you are playing with all the marbles. Okay? This thing that Ron told me you'll be equal number one would have never happened. Ron could never say that and get away with that statement with Flavio Briatore. So there's a lesson there. So I think, you know, he made a mistake there. But I just cannot see that Renault package delivering. He may find a way to win a race or two like he did in 2008. But I just cannot see him. Even if he spends 3 years there, I do not see him winning. Not that he cannot win, but I just do not see the team providing him the package he will need to bring home the bacon and whatever he wants to bring home, jalapenos or whatever. What say you?
You're absolutely correct. I mean, in real world thinking, in reality, Alonso is not going to win another Grand Prix. Alonso's not going to win a championship. He's going to be impressive. I mean, the race in Bahrain, his start was impressive. His qualifying was impressive. Where Ocon was nowhere. You're right. The package is definitely not there. I feel the same way about Sebastian Vettel. The only thing we hope is that George Russell and Max Verstappen will be together at Mercedes next year. But apparently Lewis Hamilton is fighting that. And he's going to fight it so much that it's going to pump him up. And that eighth title is going to come even easier than in 2020. So it is what it is. Sometimes life is very unfair, and your mom was right.
Yes, you know, I mean, talking of Lewis and Mercedes package, the resources that Mercedes has, the engineering expertise, depth of engineering know-how, the kind of people that Toto Wolff has assembled. If Lewis stays at the end of the season, if he signs another 2 or 3 year contract with, especially with the same team, Mercedes AMG, I will not be surprised if this guy retires with 10 championships, because who's going to stop him? Nobody has the package. Honda, if they had stayed, they probably could have toppled him. And who knows, Max may still do that. But in the next 3 years, I will not be surprised if Lewis wins more championships than other drivers who are on the grid right now. And yes, there is a lot of wishful thinking that Max Verstappen will be at Mercedes at the end of this, after this year, and along with George Russell. But we'll see how it works out. We will see. Now, sir, the driver who really impressed me, because, you know, excellence is expected every time from Lewis and Max, no question about it. But the driver who really surprised me, and I'm very happy because I've been following his career from the first time he raced in single-seater, and that kid was Lando Norris. He had a very impressive performance. He had the upper hand on teammate, no less of a driver than Daniel Ricciardo. I would love to see this kid establish himself as a bona fide top Formula One driver like Daniel Ricciardo has. Because the heavy metal from Stuttgart in the back of his car should take the McLaren team to the front of the grid in the near future. And wasn't it very nice, Mr. Rogers, to see McLaren being so competitive?
It was very exciting.
Were you surprised at his performance?
No, I knew he was going to have the upper hand. Ricciardo had been struggling with getting comfortable in the car. Norris is going to take advantage of this in the next few, two or three races. Norris is going to be all over Ricciardo. He is comfortable in the car, no doubt. So Ricciardo's got some work to do. I feel sort of bad because sometimes a car and a driver, you know, they fit perfectly and everything is just right. But sometimes a car and a driver, they don't fit at all. There's issues and it never works. So I hope Vettel and Ricciardo can get through this teething problem.
I am still hopeful that Daniel Ricciardo will find a way to win a race this year. I just hope, I would hate to see Sebastian Vettel leave Formula One as a flustered and frustrated driver. I mean, you don't win four championships in a row unless you're very good. So I'd like to see him get some success before he bails out. Now let's talk about everybody's favorite driver, the man who says nothing but he's still the most popular driver, Mr. Kimi Raikkonen. The old man of the sea is sailing to his retirement with the team he started way back in 2001. 20 years in Formula One speaks well for his immense natural talent, which, according to ex-teammate DC, is enough to go fast without even trying. Kimi never paid any money to get a seat. In fact, he was once paid $25 million not to drive in Formula One. I think before the lights are turned off in the palatial studios for good, because we can't go on forever, in our lifetime I think we will see Robin Raikkonen in racing. Your thoughts on the long career of Kimi, sir, which has been, as we all know, based on Mr. Presley's program, a little more action, a little less conversation.
Well, it's exciting. You know, it's pretty much his last season. 20 years in Formula One. It's fantastic. He had some fantastic starts last year, and I expect the same thing from him this year. And not only that, but Alpha, which has the same motor as Ferrari, I mean, the same spec, look pretty good. So it's interesting to see the Kimi, and then you got our new guy, Tsunoda, who's going to be a whippersnapper.
Yes, sir. And at the top of the show, you alluded to the fact Alonso feeling better, good about himself. He was quoted as saying that he's claiming I'm better than Hamilton and Max. And as it always happens, a day or two later, now he's saying he did not say that. His words have been twisted. Well, you know, in case he said that, just in case, I'm not saying he did, we've never seen Nando and Max in the same team. So we can't do an apple-to-apple comparison there. But we have seen Nando and the other guy as teammates in 2007. So a lime-to-lime comparison is available and possible. And we know by now who was and is 7-Up and who was not so sprite. Now you have a direct line to Nando. Did he really say that or it was taken out of context?
He did really say that. It sounded good to me, and I give him a thumbs up, because he was right.
You sure?
Positive.
Two championship compared to 7-8 in the world?
I don't care.
I do. But anyway, now let's take a look at the rookies and great expectations. Nikita Mazepin. Somebody called him Nikita Mazepin. Now, he did not have a good start to the Formula One career. Actually, it was reported that in like 20 years, he has had the shortest F1 career because he lasted only, he made it like, what, two corners, and then he spun the car and crashed, and he's singing your favorite song, I'm Sorry.
I'm sorry, so sorry, that I...
But Lee, at least he's fessing up to that he made a mistake. He's not saying something broke or this and that. Now, Mick Schumacher, both Mick and Nikita have a car that basically is more like a test mule than a car, because the team has already said they are bringing the final upgrade to the car at the next race, which is round two. So these kids will be languishing in the back and probably taking over the Williams spot as dead last in the championship. But in a way, it's good, at least for Mick Schumacher. He can fly below the radar, get to have some experience in Formula One, how it operates, the tracks and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, we'll see how far he can go based on his performance. The third new man is the Tsunami Tsunoda. He is talk of town based on his impressive performance and style. If he can rattle the cage of Gasly, I don't think Honda will make a complete U-turn on the decision to quit Formula One, but I will not be surprised if they continue behind closed doors their collaboration with Red Bull on engine development or whatever can be done to the unit. Through all their successes, ups and downs, Honda has supported Sato-san all the way to Formula One and two wins at the Brickyard. And he also was British F3 champion, won the Macau Grand Prix. And I'm sure Honda will do what they can to get a taste of honey and success for a Japanese driver in Formula One. When that happens, all of Tokyo will be blowing their own Tijuana brass. Were you impressed by Mr. Tsunoda's... What really impressed me is he became the first Japanese driver to score on his Grand Prix debut. He kept going. He did not do a Maldonado or some other, you know, crash fest, which is very easy to do in your first race. Did you like his debut, sir?
I thought his debut was okay. It was good. I mean, I expected maybe a little bit more, but Gasly is going to have his hands full. That's for sure. Even though I think Gasly really, really did very, very well in this Grand Prix.
Yeah, and you know, the guy, again, it was expected because that's what Sergio Perez does. I mean, last year he was dead last at this track and won the race, his first. And this time when I saw that Red Bull parked, I thought it was Max. And he was lucky enough that he was able to reboot the car and get going. But he put in a very good performance to finish in the top five, I believe he was. So that was a very good comeback. And it's pretty obvious that he is going to score a lot of points for Red Bull and maybe a rear gunner for Max in a few races. And that's what Red Bull is really looking for from Numero Dos. But I would like to see him do a good job and, you know, survive at Red Bull, because that's a good seat and hopefully they're paying him well too. Next we come to points to ponder, sir. Shall we proceed?
Absolutely.
Okay, sir, this was the third time Bahrain Grand Prix was the season opener. On one occasion, a driver racing for Ferrari for the first time won the season opener. And who could that be now, Mr. Rogers?
El Machismo.
Exactly, El Machismo in Rosso. Now, Bahrain Grand Prix was race number 400 for Pirelli in Formula One. And right now they're racing with no competition, because we should have some tire manufacturers, I think. And sir, it was 400 race for Pirelli, and it was victory number 300 for a British driver in Grand Prix racing. Formula One Grand Prix racing, I should say. Half of the drivers on the grid are Grand Prix winners. Four of them were champions. Lewis, Alonso, Vettel, and Kimi. Now, interestingly, it was mentioned last, even though he was taken into account, he was out for two seasons, but still very impressive. Last time Alonso was out qualified by a teammate was in Malaysia, 2017. And Lewis, Max, Bottas on podium for the 14th time, equaling the previous podium appearances by the same set of drivers, which was shared by Lewis, Nico, and Sam. So this is becoming more and more of a historical season after season for Lewis, which is good. Now, sir, more American involvement in Formula One. Red Bull has signed Oracle, the database company, as one of their sponsors. And many moons ago, Oracle also appeared on Benetton when they had a German driver who won a lot of races and championships. And the Oracle has nice big signage on the side of the car. And I think it was Nando's shirt. I saw a logo for Citibank, Citi, as they are now known. And Citi used to sponsor Roger Penske's team in Formula One when they were known as First National Citibank. So it's good to see more American involvement, and hopefully we can get another race in the U.S. That'll be good. Any chance you may come to Texas if that works out with Open Doors?
Not a chance, Ness.
Anything else about the Grand Prix, sir?
The Grand Prix was fun, but let's get some new drivers to win. You know, I want 5 different winners. I want competition, a lot of winning, just like in NASCAR. It was exciting. You know what I'm talking about, Ness? And on that note, why don't we take a quick break? Because we've got Gary Sloan sitting in the bullpen.
Hello, listeners. My name's Gary Sloan, and this is this week's edition of In the Pit Lane. So the 2021 season gets off with a blast, but off the track, there's all the uncertainty in the COVID-19 world. Liberty Media may well have had a rebrand, introducing a new logo and F1 theme, but it can't gloss over the hard financial reality. Last year, revenues fell 44%, posted an operating loss of $386 million. It also took big hits on its other businesses, with the Atlantic Braves baseball team and concert promoter Live Nation posting losses. Not helping is Liberty's $3.7 billion worth of debt sitting on its balance sheet. So as a third wave of COVID-19 spreads throughout Europe, the news that international spectators will not be allowed to attend the Olympic Games held this summer in Japan must have left Liberty worried. Putting a brave face on the development, Liberty president Greg Maffitti told Wall Street analysts, "I think one of the things about being part of the Liberty Group is we have the ability to hopefully look ahead and be thoughtful with the benefit of our operating companies." The problem is Liberty is banking literally on spectators returning to races, race promoter fees returning to normal, and a full race calendar. So backtracking, Maffitti claimed Liberty were not in the crystal ball business and commented, "We're not here to make a forecast, in part because some of this is still up in the air, floating around." So Liberty may need to raise cash. And F1 CEO Stefano Domenico told Service TV, "There's a great deal of interest in Formula One from the financial market. Many investors are knocking on our door, so that's a good sign." And among these investors, Liberty may well return to the world's sovereign wealth funds, like it did last April when Saudi Arabia's sovereign wealth fund took a 5.7 stake in Liberty's Live Nation business. The thing is, the world's sports empires have a combined value in excess of $100 billion and so are attractive to the wealth funds, no more so than Liberty, which holds a number one position with a valuation of $13 billion. If you look at these wealth funds, the top 10 in the world include 4 from China, Singapore, Kuwait, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and Abu Dhabi. Names all ring a bell? Well, it's no coincidence these wealth funds hold races, with Kuwait and Qatar waiting in the wings. Let's not forget Bahrain and the United Arab Emirates, who also have interest in Formula One. The wealth funds have trillions of dollars looking for a home. So when the China and the Middle Eastern countries face human rights criticism, you can see Liberty's dilemma. But bucking the trend is the world's largest sovereign wealth fund, although it's actually a government pension fund. Step forward, Norway, with its $1.3 trillion fund, owns approximately 1.5% of all the equities in the world. Included in their fund is £30 billion worth of investments in sports-related companies. Now, the Norwegians go back to 2012 and invested in Formula One when CVC Capital Partners owned the business, paying $300 million for a 4% stake. But it was a relationship that turned sour. And the Norwegians were incensed when the then CEO Bjarne Ekelsen faced a trial for bribery. Chief executive of the fund launched an attack on Ekelsen, telling a Norwegian newspaper, "He wished Mr. Ekelsen had been formally suspended from his role ahead of the forthcoming trial. We are of course not happy with the situation that has arisen. What's especially unfortunate are the corruption charges." The Norwegians nevertheless, in the hope of a big payday, stuck with F1, but now seem to have had a change of heart. Last month reduced their holdings by 20%, now holding 1.27% of F1, worth about £155 million. So, unless we go back to where we were last year, we might be seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. But the world still grapples with the ongoing pandemic. Formula One may need to access the resources of the sovereign wealth funds, aligning them even closer with some of the questionable regimes in the world. But on a footnote, Liberty's owner, John Malone, may decide to become his own individual wealth fund, having seen his fortune rise during 2020 by $2.3 billion to $8.1 billion. That's it for another week. Until next week, stay safe, stay well.
Thanks, Gary. And we'll be back after these brief messages.
Hi, I'm Carlos Sainz, and you are listening F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial, and now, let's hear from Tim with the Tech Talk and the Grosjean Accident Report. Take it away, Tim.
Hello, race fans, and welcome to the 2021 F1 season. I'll talk about the rule changes for the season in just a bit, but first I'd like to discuss the results of the investigation into Grosjean's crash in Bahrain last November. The report, or at least what's posted on the FIA's website, is quite short and well worth reading, but I'll list a few major talking points here. First off, the numbers. At the moment of contact between cars that led to the crash, Grosjean's car was traveling at 241 kilometers per hour, or 150 miles per hour. When his car impacted the barriers, the speed was 192 kilometers per hour, or 120 miles per hour. The forces on the car led to peak deceleration of 67 Gs. Keep in mind, normal F1 decelerations and braking reach about 6 Gs, and normal cars can brake at less than 1 G. The Hans device, the device that prevents a driver's head from slamming forward under high deceleration, which I talked about way back in 2014, and other safety devices, including the survival cell and halo, all worked as intended. Some concerns from the report are the fact that when the car split into two, part of the ERS system remained with the power unit, and the rest remained with the survival cell and passed through the barrier. This means that there was potential for bare wire to short-circuit and deliver large amounts of electrical energy to the driver or a first responder. Thankfully, this was not the case this time. Additionally, as you have probably seen, a large fire erupted, and this was due to severed connections between the fuel bladder and engine supply, as well as between the fuel bladder and an inspection hatch. Grosjean was able to exit the car in 27 seconds, which required him to remove the harness, headrest, steering wheel, and his foot from his boot, which was pinned inside the survival cell. He suffered burns to his hands and was released from the hospital 3 days later. If there's an upside to a crash like this, it's the fact that it has spurred the FIA to investigate 19 major accidents and apply lessons learned to 26 new and ongoing research initiatives in vehicle safety, circuit safety, driver safety equipment, and medical and rescue. Some of these initiatives include review of side view mirrors, power unit mounting and failure modes, circuit barrier openings, glove thermal properties, and research into novel barrier systems. So let's hope that substantial, positive changes are made from these efforts. And now on to a lighter topic, the 2021 rule changes. You may recall, 2021 was originally supposed to bring a huge set of changes, but these have generally been deferred until 2022 because of COVID and the shortened 2020 season. A lot of outdated articles are still floating around the internet that reference the rule changes that were originally planned, but thankfully I found a good interview with James Allison on YouTube, so thanks to Mercedes-AMG Petronas team for providing that. In summary, some aerodynamic elements on the sides, rear, and underside of the car have more stringent space requirements than before. These restrictions are intended to bring car performance back to that of the start of the 2020 season. New tires are being used, and these tires are heavier but more durable than last season. Now there is only one mid-season power unit upgrade allowed. This one must really give the engineers a headache because without the ability to make frequent changes mid-season, the car at season launch needs to be competitive, and the changes made halfway through the season must be aggressive enough to prevent a car from falling behind, but not so risky that they lead to performance or stability decreases, which can ruin the second half of the season. A cost cap of $145 million now applies to all teams. Cost cutting has been ongoing for years now. A quick look back at some previous budgets show spending as high as $400 million in 2016, according to Forbes. And finally, wind tunnel and CFD time will be regulated on a sliding scale, where the previous year's weakest performing team will be given about 20% more time than last year's winning team, with all other teams falling somewhere in the middle according to their performance last year. So that's all for today. Thanks for listening and enjoy the new season.
Thank you, Tim. Keep up the good work. And now here is the guru, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And my thanks to Tech Talk Tim also. Always appreciate it. Okay, sir, the Formula One season started in Bahrain and so did the Formula Two. Flying Kiwi on his debut, Red Bull 1-2 in the opening race of the season as Liam Lawson from New Zealand led the race from start to finish. From Kiwi to Curry, Jahan Daruvala from Mumbai was second with German driver David Beckmann. Now, both these drivers, Liam Lawson and Jahan Daruvala, are supported by Red Bull, but they drive for two different teams. Formula 2 has a new format, a little complicated. Now there are three races per weekend, two sprint races on Saturday and feature race on Sunday. In the old days, it was the reverse, a feature race and then a sprint race on Sunday. Qualifying goes something like this. There's a qualifying session and the first 10 qualifiers start the first sprint race in reverse order. So the guy who qualifies 10, he starts on pole in the first sprint race. The finishing order of the race, of the first sprint race, sets the grid for the second sprint race. And the feature race on Sunday is based on the original qualifying order. A little complicated there, but it made up for fantastic three races. Okay? The second sprint race, so on a Saturday now, Mr. Rogers, you get two Formula 2 races and a Formula 1 qualifying. So it's a pretty good package. Rookie rolling to success continued as Aussie mate managed by Mark Webber took victory. The name is Oscar Piastri. He put in Oscar performance past two seasons, winning both the Formula Renault Euro Cup and Formula 3 championship. He is in the Alpine Academy, and if he wins the championship, which I have a strong feeling he may do that, he may be the second Australian driver on the F1 grid next season. And both would be very competitive and good drivers. And you know, when you are a good driver, it shows in your performance, and performance takes you places. Now we come to Sunday's feature race. First Chinese win in feature race as Guan Yu Zhu wins from pole position and takes championship lead with 41 points. He won a race last year also, but it was the sprint race. So good history making effort by him. Dan Ticktum, bad boy of motorsports, was second with race one winner Liam Lawson third. Lawson is now second in the championship with 30 points. Man from Mumbai, Jahan Daruvala, is third with 28 points and winner of the second race of the weekend, Oscar Piastri, is fourth with 21 points. You know, he could have scored a lot of points in the final race of the weekend, but he tangled with somebody late in the race, which was really not required, trying to regain a position he had lost. And in doing so, irrational exuberance was shown by him, and it cost him a lot of points. But long season, and man, I'll tell you, if a rookie like him or Liam Lawson wins the championship, it will finish off the career F1 aspiration of a lot of drivers who are in the second and third years, like Robert Schwartzman from Russia and Dan Ticktum, even though these are very good drivers. Now, sir, we come to MotoGP, and what a Sunday I had. Local time, Florida. The race started at 11 and ended like close to 1 o'clock, and 1 o'clock we had MotoGP. They also started the season in the Arabian Night, the Grand Prix in Qatar, or Qatar as the natives would call, was won by Maverick Vinales on a Yamaha. Ducati riders were second and third. Johann Zarco, who is from your home country, and Francesco Bagnaia, respectively. I'm hoping that Mr. Marc Marquez, the LCH on two wheels, will be back soon. And wouldn't it be wonderful if he wins his first race back from injury? Now, sir, I'm sure you're familiar with Bob Bondurant Racing School. You know, we interviewed Bob Bondurant a few years ago. I think it was in Austin. The team is now called the Radford, R-A-D-F-O-R-D, Radford team. and they include some people, and one of them is Jenson Button, the same Button who was world champion in Formula One. There are four partners, and they are reviving the Radford story into a lifestyle brand that celebrates auto design and performance, high-performing driving, and racing. And now, sir, we come to famous last words, and today they are very good, plain simple English from Toto Wolff. And he was talking about all these issues they had with Turn 4 rules and interpretation. And he said, and I quote, "The rules need to be clear and simple and not a Shakespeare novel." End of quote. And all I can say is, to be or not to be an 8-time world champion is the big question. Thank you for listening. We shall meet again next week behind Palatian walls. In the meantime, we have located some very nice Arabian theme music for you folks from the orchestra of Ron Goodwin. So please enjoy the tune called Dancing Eyes.
Thank you, Ron. Thank you, Nasser. I want to thank everybody who listens. We'll see you at the hot dog stand.
Bye-bye.